shuffle.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill shuffle. Hello and welcome to episode 31 of Kill Shuffle.
Yeah, finally.
I know, we're finally
old enough to make your own life decisions.
Our podcast now has as many episodes as a lot of the months have days.
Yeah.
I'm Donal.
I'm Dylan.
And we're bringing you four.
Yes.
And one we're taking a look back at as well.
I believe so, yeah.
As is our usual schedule and program. Yeah. I think it is five new releases, although one of them will mostly be coming from Dill.
Yeah.
I only got to four this week. But without any further ado, we're going to cover Braille by Palm Reader, Pleasure by LaGalaxy, Springtime and Blind by Fiddlehead, Modern Time Machines and their self-titled album, and Hop Along Dog. Yeah. Bark Your Head Off Dog by Hop Along. That's yeah. right. And then we're also going to have a look back as our sort of retrospective to Speak for Yourself by Imogen Heap, which is from 2005.
Or Imogen Heap, as I always call it.
Oh, God.
Imogen.
You can say her name whatever way you want, just don't expect her to like it. Yeah. All right, so Dylan, any crazy things to bring up before we get started?
Not really. I mean, what have I been listening to? I guess the Jazz Hop Cafe.
Ooh.
Or Jazz Pop Cafe.
Sure.
On YouTube. Basically, it's a lot of like chill hip-hop lo-fi music with many different themed playlists that can go on for hours, and it's just beautifully set up.
You just bliss out and,
yeah.
and they play have, games or they, read or something.
They've made a Spotify playlist now that they update, which is super convenient for me.
Yeah. Sometimes I like listening to all my artists and albums and everything, but sometimes I just need my Vaporwave playlist.
Yeah, certainly.
I just hit the shuffle button.
It is great. They upload like an hour long like cafe jazz versions of Studio Ghibli themes.
Ooh.
And it's beautiful.
That does sound excellent. Check that one out. What's that called? Jazz Hop.
The Jazz Hop Cafe.
Cafe on YouTube. All right, great. Very good stuff. And then I suppose we're gearing up for the release of our band's EP.
Yeah.
So we were doing a photo shoot up a hill yesterday, and we've got final mixes coming in this week.
Yeah.
It's exciting times.
Yeah. The suspense is killing me.
Poor Dylan here is like vibrating with suspense. But less about us and more about Palm Reader. Why not? Let's start with Palm Reader.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Holy
dude.
Shit.
How can I put this into words? When I say this is the most well-rounded sophomoric release, I guess.
It's their third album.
Okay, yeah.
So,
try
senior
more.
Senior year, no.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is Palm Reader's third album. They're from Nottingham, and they play. Up to this point, I never delved all that deep into their music, but what I understood them to play was pretty much like metallic hardcore. Really dense slabs of tricky, complex, hardcore.
Early Every Time I Die.
Yeah.
Just craziness.
Not cranked way, way up. Yeah. That's kind of what I understood. And I did have a listen to... I've never listened to the first one, the one with the airplane on the front. God forgive me, I can't remember the name of either of them. But the second album with the flowers on the front, I definitely did give a listen to it. And kind of... It just was a little too thick for me. Do you know what I mean? It was a bit too dense. It was... I just couldn't quite wrap my brain around it. So I had some trepidation coming into this. Did you have any preconceived notions of Palm Reader?
Well, I knew Bad Weather. Of course, the one with the one with the planes.
Oh, that's their first album. Yeah. What's the second one called? Just
second one is
Beside the Ones We Love. That's right.
Yeah, they have very good album covers,
by
the way.
They do.
Genius ones. Very thematically suiting.
Mm.
Every time, and I think this time around, it's definitely plays into the vibe of the music.
Mm. Is it kind of a... It's sort of a... fetus, is it, or something on the cover? It looks like sort of a in utero type vibe going on.
Yeah, I'll try and get back to it. Yeah,
it's like a little baby's hand underwater.
Underwater, yeah.
So yeah, like interesting imagery and
Braille. So feeling out things without knowing.
It does feel like a rebirth a little bit.
Yeah,
for the band.
Yeah,
because they've been away for a couple of years and they're back.
Actually.
I kind of feel like a bit of an idiot for not paying more attention to these guys until this point.
Yeah, I think this is like the slam dunk.
Holy moly.
With the trifecta of music they brought so far. What did you think, first off?
Surprise was my first emotion, and especially listening to Swarm, which is just a great way to open an album like this, because it blends like elements of hardcore, metal, pop punk, and even sort of progressive, like progressive rock, into one, you know, four and a half minute track. It's crazy how much variety there is, and that immediately hooked me, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah, like this goes from, this runs the gambit from everything from Every Time I Die to Killswitch Engage, to While She Sleeps,
Architects,
to just...
Even someone like Propaganda.
Yeah.
Like that,
Propaganda, yeah.
Like turbocharged punk. That's, you know, it's got a bit of everything.
Yeah, to like the most pop punk of metal bands. Like Bullet From a Valentine, choruses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think the pop punk elements, or like the liveliness of everything, really sets it apart from music that is connected to this. Because there is a sense of lively, creative rebirth.
Definitely.
Like you hear it in the guitars, the lead guitars especially. Or like, it's almost like he's got his hand on a freaking Devin Townsend Ocean Machine pedal at points.
On Internal Winter, there's sort of this whammied out lead guitar sound that almost reminds you of Adebisi Shank
or so sparkling.
Alpha Male Tea Party or something.
And Breach is like that as well.
Yeah.
Just beautiful. Beautiful segs, I guess.
Yeah, there's it's almost like what Rollo Tomasi do on their interludes, or Animals as Leaders. Yeah.
But it's not just that now. Like, we'll get to like the last. We'll just go straight to the last song. A Lover, a Shadow. That has everything.
Yeah, that's a good companion piece for Swarm, because that brings back in those really interesting, like pop punk influences, along with all of the heavy
prog,
the Gojiras and the Deftones and all that stuff.
Yeah, definitely has that, like the slow contemplative Deftones build-ups, that really get you to think about what's going to come on, and then it blows your face off.
There's always like, they're always ready to explode. It doesn't Breach and Dorothy, which are the two kind of segue tracks, are the only times where it's like real downtime. Then apart from that, there's moments of light and shade, and sometimes both at the same time. Like on Coalesce and Clock, I think it's Clockwork. The singer, his name escapes me for the second. I think his name is Ben, possibly. Singer, could be wrong about that, but anyway, we'll move on. No, it's not, I didn't take down their names anyway.
That's okay, we love
the singer. The singer, god, whatever his name is, he's kind of almost like screaming into the abyss. There's like really chilled out ambient verses, but he's going full throttle on the vocal.
I really enjoy. Bands like Darren Gray do that, bands like old school, I guess Mastodon do that, Like, there's a really nice balance that I think doesn't get me as sick as I am normally with like, metalcore.
Yeah, I don't think this is... I think this does draw from some of the same influences as some of the better metalcore bands. Like, I can definitely hear a lot of the vocal approach of Bury Tomorrow, for example, especially in the clean vocal.
Bury Tomorrow mixed with modern Korn...
Yeah.
Last two albums.
Josh is the singer. Yeah. I knew I had his name here somewhere. There's actually two Joshes in the band. But cool. he does just a really impressive job here of just pinwheeling between everything from, you know, pig squeals and straight up, you know, hardcore, metallic hardcore vocals, all the way to pretty softly articulated cleans as well.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes like, I guess it's in the style, but the very atonal monotone yelling.
Yeah.
Kind of goes on for a bit too much sometimes, but you get enough balance with other songs that you don't mind it as much.
Yeah, I'm normally not a fan of relying on the scream during quiet sections, but at the same time, I think he's... Something about his delivery, I think, makes it more palatable. Not palatable, but like for me, it's I don't mind it as much. Actually, I kind of like the way he does that because there's so much variety in terms of the vocals here.
Yeah, and he can sing with the scream, which is handy.
Yeah, he can do it all. Exactly. Yeah. Like, it reminds me of what Frank Turner does, especially on Million Dead and the guy from Cars on Fire. But it's almost like his heavy vocal is heavier and his quiet vocal is something different again. So it's really cool. It's a really eclectic vocal performance.
Yeah, like, what are the songs that are really capturing you so much?
I think a lot of the really impactful ones come earlier down in the track list. That's not to say it peters out, but I
because
I
it think, does it does different stuff.
Yeah.
At the halfway point, quite different stuff.
Yeah, and it's almost like the end of side A when at the end of Breach, and then it goes into more expansive terrains on like Coalesce, and I think the turn in particular has
Dorothy especially.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
That I don't know what that song's about, but it seems pretty heavy just by like the instrumental context.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the kind of crazy variety of songs like the turn where you've got almost post-hardcore kind of leads going on, like these noodly
staccato
leads.
Craziness.
And then they bring in a lot of Black Peak style. I think some of the melodic parts are very similar to Black Peak's what they did on Statues. Mm. For better and worse, parts of Black Peak's that I found a little bit tough going in terms of the melody, like a lot of these chords are kind of rise and fall one tone, which I think are fine, but then the rest of that song it there's so much else going on, like there's an almost sort of melodic death metal at the gates Gothenburg thing going on in the middle eight, and then in the outro they go like full Meshuggah chugs. So when you get all that packed into like 5 minutes, there's something incredibly impressive and accomplished about making that all glue together as well as it does.
Yeah, and the whole vibe, the whole color I get from it is really nice.
Yeah,
and exactly. That's the album cover. That sums it up.
Visually. Yeah, exactly. Like it is kind of smothering and drowning at points, but they're at the same, there's still like a ray of light breaking through.
Yeah, there is some happy points to this, which is, I'm sure, intentional. You know, there's a lot of struggle emotionally, and then like the high points are really well earned.
Yeah, like the that chorus in I think it's Internal Winter. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's hard.
Or the middle eight in Like a Wave is almost sort of Soilwork-y in terms of combining this like triumphant sound with blast beats, and they do that again towards the end in Clockwork, where it's like where you get this beautiful like harmonized dual lead guitars, which you don't hear all that often outside of like Northern Europe.
Darren Gray do that as well.
But the touchstone for me was, did you ever listen to Liturgy?
No.
That band, they're the craziest band because they do just face melting black metal, but it's all major key. Like it's the weirdest thing ever because it sounds so like triumphant and jubilant. But
a lot of black metal can do that.
Yeah. But it's fully like blast beats, and that's kind of where they go with a little section of that song, Clockwork. I find it can get a little overwhelming at times.
Yeah.
If you listen to it literally from start to finish in one chunk.
Yeah, it's a gorgeously heavy album.
Yeah.
To deal with all the way through, but I think it's a very good album to piece out bits from. Like I'd say like all of this is perfect for live
yeah,
play.
Yeah,
like this is a whole album of stuff to now play live against everything else, which is already pretty kick ass.
The only issue I'd say would be pulling off the vocal performance that we get on this album live. Like if he's able to do it, amazing. Like that's so impressive. But there's a lot to tackle.
Yeah, you know, just get the audience to sing it occasionally.
yeah, exactly. Like, I'm sure you can.
Yeah.
Did you ever another band that they kind of remind me of is Norma Jean. Did you listen to that last Norma Jean album?
Yeah. I grew to it late. It took me a while.
Yeah.
But that was like my first outing of this kind of.
Yeah, there's definitely on Coalesce in particular that it's, you know, slightly off kilter, just massive washes of distortion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he does have a similar vocal style as well as the singer from Norma Jean. That is a high praise because that was one of my favorite albums of 2016, that Norma Jean album.
But yeah, shall we roll ahead to the songs of the day?
Let's. I'll just last thing. Okay, just last little point of information is same producer as the Rolo Tomasi album.
Oh shit!
So there you go, Lewis Johns.
Perfect.
He's hitting it out of the park this year.
Yeah.
Favorite song?
A Lover of Shadow. That sums it up.
Yeah, A Lover of Shadow is great. I think I'm gonna go. Swarm.
Okay.
I think that the whole album's. Draws from the same well as Swarm, but Swarm is is almost like this distillation. It's like the double concentrate version of
it's a statement of intent.
Things that are pulled from on the rest of the album, so I think it's a good one to pick for my favorite. I'm gonna give it an 8.
I'm giving it a 9.
Awesome.
Fuck yeah. It's awesome.
Off to a good start.
For a band I didn't really pay attention to too much.
Yeah.
I'm now on board.
I'm on board too. Yeah. I really enjoyed this. This surprised me. Just crazy heaviness from Nottingham. get it into you. The name of the band is Pam Reader. The name of the album is Braille. Yeah. Like what blind people read with.
Yes.
Okay. Moving swiftly
on. For me in the morning.
Do something completely different.
Yeah.
This is the third album from the Dublin band La Galaxy. It's called Pleasure.
Yeah.
And it's got a picture of a tiger sitting in front of an ice cave on the front.
Yeah.
Does that give you a pretty decent indication of the sound of the album?
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure Jared Leto probably okayed that.
He doesn't have tigers. He doesn't get tigers. Okay, that's a symbol for us all to use.
I'm pretty sure there was one album cover that had the title. Had a tiger on it.
Yeah, I know.
Was it a... Actually, that was the last
Kings and Queens, isn't it? Yeah, fuckers. They don't get tigers. Anyway.
But anyway. Unrelated.
Back to La Galaxy. So, La Galaxy, just spelled L-E and then Galaxy with an I-E at the end instead of a Y. They're a Dublin electronic band, I guess. Like, there is a live drummer. And there's a guy who plays live bass. And then there's two keyboard players. And Michael Pope sings as well as playing keyboard.
Yeah. A lot of work.
Although, you wouldn't know the live feel listening to this so much.
No. No, I've only seen them once, and that was in Tower Records.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was recently, actually.
Okay, how do they do? Because I've always been incredibly.
Oh, they're incredibly lively in a kind of not an empty room, but it was like a Tower Records audience.
Sure.
So it's kind of like not raving in the fucking store because they don't want to get fucking arrested or anything. But
yeah.
Yeah, a lot of energy.
This is I've seen their own headline show, and I've seen them play at Trinity Bowl, actually, if I'm being honest. Yeah. And both times glow sticks were provided to the audience, and a great time was had by all. They're a wonderful, wonderful live act.
They're highly requested in the Dublin scene for what they do.
And they are kind of one of those bands that will play your car boot sale. Like they live for live, and they play all the time, constantly touring. So this is their third actual studio album, although they have been around now for a decade, which is crazy. And I've been aware of them since about 2009. They had a single called You Feel the Fire. That was kind of when I got on board. Okay. And so their first album, Laserdisc Nights 2, I listened back to, and actually it's got some real gems. It's a proper like... sci-fi, you know that vector plane that you get like from the what are those games like the original arcade Star Wars, you know that kind of green vector lines, like that's kind of the aesthetic they're going for, a real sort of Outrun type aesthetic. Very very much like space theme, very sci-fi, very cool sort of Knight Rider type stuff. And then the second album, Le Club, was their major label debut, you could call it, and that one expanded the sound out. They were bringing in guest singers, they were bringing in you know, other influences. A lot of it sounded like an 80s workout video, which I was totally in favor of. The sound of La Galaxy, to sum it up, is basically all 80s all the time. It's synth pop with a massive...
But what kind of 80s?
Club-ready sound.
Because there are many shades of 80s. Which shade does this take from?
I would say the synthetic 80s. Like, it's 80s dance music, just with every single element turned up to 11.
Eurythmics. But more ravey.
Yeah, more dancey than that. I'm trying to think, like, who were the... Like, Giorgio Moroder, maybe?
Okay,
Like, I'm not so familiar with the... I know the sound, but the artists kind of escape me.
No,
But, you know, but it's definitely 80s dance pop. It's not the more heady, underground stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, Giorgio Moroder is definitely the comparison.
And, like, even on a track like... I think it's Demi Moore. They go for, like, Thriller by Michael Jackson is almost the touchstone. So it's very much drawing from, like, pop music. But they've developed so much of their own signature sound at this point that, to me, it just sounds like La Galaxy. But, yeah, but, like, you know, people like Salt and Pepper and, a little bit of... Cyndi Lauper. a little bit of... Bits and Pieces, Miami Sound Machine, maybe a little bit of Wham. I don't know. It's kind of a little bit of everything. Soft Cell. Anyway, that's La Galaxy.
But why? Okay.
But what? What?
But why?
But why?
Why don't I like it as much? Because I can't answer that.
Yeah.
Too much.
Okay, well, maybe let's dig into this, right? So you, so yeah, so you don't like it as much as what they've done before, or is, are you new to them?
I've heard bits of them before, and I've been like, just stare at the sky, kind of like, okay.
Okay.
What's new?
So you, you new? Yeah, so you haven't, like, you were never obsessed with, like, any of their music before. Like, you would hear it coming on whatever, like, the radio or on a playlist or something.
Yeah. That's it. Like, everybody at, like, I don't know, an IDT ball would go crazy hearing that they're for lineups, and I'd be like, okay.
Yeah, yeah,
this
okay.
This is an everybody band.
Okay, well, I understand that.
But this is not for, that's not strictly speaking about the music.
Yeah.
The music, is it, are they trying too hard to get that 80s to latch onto that?
No, I see, the thing about it is this is definitely, it's definitely La Galaxy doing La Galaxy.
It seems, yeah, the personality's there. There's a lot of personality in this.
And they've recruited May Kay, aka Mary Kate Garrity, who used to be the lead singer of Fight Like Apes.
Okay.
As their front woman now. She is an integral part of the band. So she was a guest singer on their last album, and that's now she's like, she's on this album, like her stamp is on about half the tracks.
I'm not too keen on that part.
So that might be part of it.
Yeah.
That might be part of it. So she's like, she like takes the lead on Day of the Child, and she's right in the mix on Lock That Heart Down as well. The Come Down, I think she's, although I think that's, yeah, she's on that as well. So maybe it could be partly to do with how you feel about her contributions.
Yeah, the vocal deliveries.
Yeah,
for the most part, don't do anything for me.
So yeah, so Fight Like
Apes, they're a bit too in your face. They're thrusting towards me a bit too fast.
Yeah, her Mayke's style is like,
I get it,
like indie punk. That's kind of what Fight Like Apes were. They were like that kind of scrappy, scrappy indie. And so you know, her vocal delivery is very much that almost sort of yelped sort of delivery. And it just depends on how you feel about it. As part of Fight Like Apes, I wasn't such a fan, but I've actually always liked what she's done with La Galaxy. Okay. So, but you're not...
I don't think so.
I think she has shades, more shades here, though. There's definitely, there's quieter moments, and there's moments where she takes it down a peg.
There's bits, like, if I heard this on, like...
Yeah.
Fucking, I don't know. Like, if like, Yoko Kanno or anybody put that on a soundtrack, a song that sounded like that, I'd be like, okay, this is just... weird and interesting weird.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I can get out of it, though.
Yeah. You see, what you get a little bit less than on this, this feels even more so than Le Club. This feels like more polished, like the rough edges have been sort of hewn away a little bit. And I think part of that might be, what's his name? Blender. His name is Johan Blender, and he's the producer that they brought in on this one. I think he has a little bit too much of a, I don't know what it is, like a mainstream ear. It feels like it's a little bit loudness wars. It feels like it's been crushed and compressed into a little cube a little bit too much. That's all I would say.
Yeah.
Sound-wise.
Yeah.
And I think...
So a radio can blast it as loud as they like.
Yeah, which they should feel welcome to.
Okay,
but
what
you lose with the bringing in May Kay as the sort of front woman is, I think you lose... Michael Pope being Michael Pope as much as he needs to be. Like, there was almost a type O negative vibe or bring it into some more pop territory, but like a, I don't know, like New Order kind of thing.
Yeah, New
Order is
more there.
Because with tracks like Midnight, he just would do this cool baritone, almost talk singing thing.
Yeah.
Which he gets to do a little bit on like Women in Love, and he gets to do on that first track, Pleasure. And those are the best moments, I think, on the album, where it's really fun and light and it's tongue in cheek, that kind of thing. I think they do really well.
Yeah, it sounds very German in that respect.
Yeah, German. Even again, like nothing like Rammstein, but it's that kind of. It's like he's got a gruff, gravelly, gritty voice that I think is lent really well to that sort of stuff.
Well, I mean, like Bauhaus and stuff like that.
Oh, Bauhaus, exactly. And they strike the balance on, like, I think on Day of the Child they do strike. I think May Kay does a great job on that track, and they strike the balance. And then there's other parts of the album where it feels like they're kind of padding for time.
Mm-hmm.
Like Demi Moore, particularly.
Oh, yeah.
It's like 6.5 minutes.
It's really long.
and it's, I guess it's their kind of take on the Barbara Streisand song. You know, like it's their on, you know, thumping house beat. And then, you know, an announcer voice just goes, Demi Moore.
that stuff.
Over and over.
Because there's
and over
a lot of that in this album.
Yeah, there's a lot of that early early 2000s trance stuff going on. Yeah,
like, Leisureplex soundtrack. Fucking 101.
Well, do you remember Zombie Nation? Do you remember that song back in the day?
No.
Oh, man.
You're pretty old, Donald.
You're missing out, man. Actually, it wasn't all that good. But there was a time when people wanted that hypnotic, what would you call it? Like, just a repetitive.
I think what you're thinking about is Eiffel 65. Music.
No, man. Eiffel 65 are angels, okay?
Yeah.
That's what I want from this band. Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
That's it. You've just locked in Europop as our retrospective 1 week. You've just locked that in right
Thankfully,
now.
Thankfully, I'm next week, so it's not gonna...
It's not gonna be Europop by Eiffel 65. Yeah. So, you know, I like a lot of it.
Okay.
But I agree with you. I think there's an ingredient X that is in shorter supply than there.
Does the sound like the songs kind of meander a bit?
Yep, can do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think filler wise, like Lock That Heart Down, it doesn't do enough. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think Guy does enough. I don't think Can't Stop does enough. They've all got bits that I like, but they don't expand on them, and they've really sort of shied away from the traditional song structure, which would normally be fine. But I don't think the core riffs, they're not riffs in electronic music, but like the core musical ideas are strong enough to sustain 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes without more variation and variety sometimes.
Yeah, it's like the spoken word not rap, but it's in between, it's spoken word
a lot of Michael's is a spoken word.
It's almost mixing two facets of song structure and genre that don't work normally.
Yeah, normally. I still think...
She comes in, I guess, that doesn't work for me.
Those
songs in particular.
If you're thinking of Lie, I really like that one.
Okay.
I do like you, I guess, but like, I don't know. I love that.
It's fun.
it's like an updated version of what they did on the last album, which was the title track. Had a woman going, do you know Le Club? Which is just such a great little line. Yeah. And I think they have recaptured that magic a little bit with that track.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything for me.
That's fair.
I get it.
Yeah. And I can't see myself going back to this one as much as I go back to Laserdisc Nights and particularly Le Club, which just felt more eclectic as a collection. Yeah. Although, how did you think about that last track, The Come Down? I think that almost saves it at the end.
Actually, it does.
Yeah,
that was fun. Yes, actual song.
Yeah, you know, that's what I mean. Actual song with different sections and much more instrumentation.
Yeah, everything sounded like it was going at once.
Mm. Do you ever listen to, or did you ever play Time Splitters 3, Time Splitters 2?
Time Splitters 2, yeah.
Do you remember Dance Like a Robot?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I see what you're getting at.
That's when they're at their best. Is like those disco strings are going, and it's and you get the, I don't know, the electronic slide whistle going like, ooh.
Yeah, like MA3 almost.
Yeah. The confetti's falling down from the ceiling. Yeah. That's when they're at their absolute best. And
I like those elements, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you got it on the first album, you got like Midnight, where there was, you know, the refrain was everybody going, woo! Or on the club, there was that track, who, us? You know, and there's less of that here. So when you see those bits, I grab onto them, you know. It's the fun and the energy of the crowd that always made Le Galaxy special for me.
Yeah. So live, they're great for live.
They're great for live. And I want to see this album perform live just to see which, because at the moment it's harder for me to pick out which parts of this album are going to work and which parts aren't going to work. So.
Yeah. It reminds me a bit of Daft Punk's Human After All.
Yeah.
A little bit of that, which is my least favorite Daft Punk album. So there you go.
Yeah, well.
Like, it was sparse.
Yeah.
Is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit darker, a little bit more industrial. It's a little bit more mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, I think there's loads to love. And there is loads that I do love here. So okay. I'm not like shitting on this by any means. I think this is great, but... You know, I wouldn't
stretch.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
Any limb.
That's okay. I just don't think it has quite the same amount of the magic of what they've done in the past. Yeah. But
favorite song, bud?
Oh, Okay, you go first.
The Come Down.
The Come Down?
Obviously, yeah.
Obviously. Okay, I'm going to go with Day of the Child. I think that sounds great.
Okay. Yep. I'll listen to that song a bit more this week and see if I even like it more.
Yeah.
I might not.
Do it. Certainly score to 10?
Five.
Cool. I'm going to give it a 7.
It's not a poor effort.
No.
They're trying, like...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that's are. All I've yeah, got. They are. That's okay, man. That's all right.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. It's not for me, but it is for Donald.
So. Yeah. No, it's all right. Yeah. I'm going to give it a 7, and that's me saying I'm giving it a 7.
He's given some seriously great albums a 7. Remember that. I've given some seriously great albums a 7.
True. But I think Le Galaxy are yet to create a 9 or a 10. That's what I'm saying. Like a recorded
for them,
albums
strictly for them.
They've now have 2 8s and a 7, and that's okay. And that's yeah. good. That's
that
a good
makes,
track record.
That makes sense.
And I look forward to hearing what they do next. So, and that was The Galaxy. The album is called Pleasure. And if you like 80s workout videos, you're going to love it. Let me tell you. It's great. Okay, so moving on. The next album that we're going to talk about is... Yeah, a band from LA. Let's talk about Modern Time Machines.
Yay.
Okay, so this is their second album. Their first album came out. If you just let me look it up real quick. For fuck's sake, I don't want Modern Times.
How are you looking it up, Donald?
can you possibly guess? Yeah, the first album came out in 2012. Oh, that's a long time ago.
It is.
That's a long time between albums.
Half a decade.
Yeah, but in any case, they're back.
Yeah.
With the self-titled. It's shoegaze. Is that fair to say?
Shoegaze, but a little bit better. A little bit better. I certainly think a little bit better.
Better than a whole genre.
Well, you know, I can't stand shoegaze.
That's really interesting to me because I quite like this. Is about as close to a purist's shoegaze,
a bum typical
slash
shoegaze.
Dream pop album as I've heard.
I think the dream pop slash bits of rock save
it. Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah. They also put space rock in their description.
Space
box,
rock,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, God, the clarity of some of the singing here is what escapes that genre confinement.
Yeah.
You got that? Like the third song, first song, there's elements where it's like when the guy's singing.
Yeah, Ben.
Yeah, Ben.
Mm.
It's a little bit more pronounced and I guess like noticeably melodic.
Yeah.
Instead of shoegaze, which is kind of, you're getting... You can kind of notice bits of melody.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely...
You can piece out everything is what I mean.
Right. It's the mix isn't like the crazy...
No.
Compressed, like just slab waveform of someone like My Bloody Valentine, for example.
Yeah.
This
is more in Honey Spider vein mixed, but actually... But
yeah.
Shoegaze.
Yeah. And there's, you know, like, there's your other touch points, like Sonic Youth and Jesus and Mary Chain, Dive. There's even bits of what I would call, like, the spacier elements of U2.
Yeah, spacier elements of U2.
Yeah. Jaws, Autolux.
Teenage Wrist, which we covered frequently recently.
Yeah, actually, there's a little bit of that, too.
The guitar work. Mm. It's very reminiscent of that. And kudos to that guitar work.
Yeah, absolutely.
It gets pretty heavy at points.
Yeah, it does. Like, especially those screaming, kind of delayed out guitar riffs. You know, that kind of come and go. It all sort of washes in and out. The mix is quite malleable.
It is.
You know, sometimes the drums are pulled up, sometimes the vocals are pulled up. You know.
Yeah, the first song does not give you a good impression of where this album goes.
Mm-hmm.
The first song is what you'd expect from a shoegazy thing, but with better production.
Yeah.
But then it goes odd places.
It does. Although I do find it definitely cohesive.
It is.
Like I especially towards the end, I do find it almost mashes into one for me a little bit. The second half, but I think there's definitely a lot to pick out in the first half. Like, on that track A Little Late. That, you know, they bring in the acoustic guitars and it almost reminds you of there's a Liverpool band called Outfit that do really, really nice sort of chilled out pop stuff, and that kind of reminds you of that a little bit. And it's nice to hear the trade-off between, I think, Nadia is her name. Nadia, this female singer, and Ben, the male singer. It's, you know, there's some really nice parts where he's providing the harmony and then she's providing the harmony, or sometimes she'll take her own song.
Yeah, the trade-off is nice. It reminds me a lot of Cocteau Twins.
Mm.
In very spacey, positive angelic.
Yeah, actually.
Themes.
I have down here a lot of the like vocal approach kind of reminds me of Mr. Burns when he's in the woods going, I bring you peace. Like this. That was what I was picturing, guys, listening to a lot of this album. It's very peaceful.
Yeah.
Blissed out, kind of
yeah.
ethereal.
Yeah, it's a good mood album.
Mm.
Most of it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the only thing I'd say mix-wise, the producer for Nothing, actually, do you know the band? Remember, do we? No, they were before the time of the show, yeah, but do you remember the band Nothing?
I do know.
Yeah, them, Josiah yeah. Mazarashi is his name. Uh-huh. And he produced this. I think the mix is a little trebly and hissy for me.
At points. Like, it starts off like that. Mm. But I think that helps for their approach, because the approach seems intentional.
It's definitely intentional.
Bass is there, the bass is what you follow, but you get to hear everything flying around, all the other instruments flying around this bass.
I think it's kind of scooped mids a bit, actually, more than it is that, like, because you've got that the kind of shimmer on top of the hi-hats and the high-pitched voices and the guitars, and then you do get the kind of thud of the drums and the bass, but there's not much in the middle.
And then when the guitar comes in to wail out at points,
it's
a lot more impactful than if it was maybe on the mix for the whole time.
Yeah.
I mean, that can work for its detriment sometimes, but I found those parts very effective.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like The Feud.
Yeah, The Feud is my favorite track. Because it's got more meat on its bones. Yeah. I think in terms of hooks.
Yeah, there's one pretty rocking track in there. What was it? It was one of them. One of them.
Alper, maybe.
Maybe yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of almost got like a Jaws kind of vibe to it.
Yeah,
which
I
really enjoyed.
I like that. That.
Yeah. Was. And then like they start bringing in, like, they have the acoustic guitars on what track is it? Shit. It's gone a little late. And then, but then they bring in like a glockenspiel on Don't Make Me Love You Again. Mm-hmm, and, you know, there are definitely things to pick out on different songs.
Yeah, I appreciate that, because, like, normally I wouldn't pick a single thing out of Shoegaze.
Mm.
And this one I'm really latching onto.
That's great.
For the good vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah, which my Bloody Valentine have done quite a bit. Like,
Yeah, absolutely. I never had anything against Shoegaze, but I think this one for me is a little too much at once. Like, I, you know, if I'm in the mood for it, it's great, but I find the full 40 minutes a bit of a test.
I disagree.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree.
Good,
with,
good.
I disagree
good.
With the all at once.
Yeah.
Because what I said with the bass
was
like, it gives, you gotta be patient with everything else coming in and out.
Yeah.
And I think it does that well, because it's still within the same sound for the most part.
Yeah.
It's just, it seems very intentionally done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this actually came to me through my musical Sherpa, Johnny Reed.
Cool.
And he was absolutely head over heels for this album. I think it's the kind of thing that if it clicks, it's like...
You got to be in the mood for
it. Do you know Superchunk at all?
Is this, no.
No,
probably not.
I feel like this is... It might be catnip for Superchunk fans.
Okay.
But yeah... You know, I think it's definitely really, really, really strong elements. It's just for me that it doesn't all hang together as well. Purely because, like, the sound isn't something that I find, like, compulsive. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get what you mean.
But I can totally appreciate that. Like, if it clicks for you, the quality remains consistent.
Yeah, more often than not. I mean, there are the elements that kind of, like, the vocals kind of get wishy-washy in the shoegaze way.
Yeah.
But that's not all of it. And thankfully they don't stick.
Yeah,
with
and
that.
Sometimes you don't, you know, sometimes you do need a album that's absolutely drowned in reverb and you know, that's not, it doesn't suit every band to play with, you know, dry guitar and just straight vocal. It's the vibe they're going for. Yep. They want you to feel spaced out,
just coked out of your retina.
Ketamine
your head.
When you're listening to the album. So, you know, they have achieved that goal, very much so.
Yeah. I enjoyed this quite a bit, actually.
Great.
A lot more. So, thank you for that surprise.
Absolutely, man. It's always good to bring something new. And these guys don't have too much of a profile. So,
yeah,
it's good. It's good to talk about them on the show. And they have created, you know, a very accomplished, I would say, accomplished album for what they set out to do.
Yeah, totally.
Definitely.
What a surprise. The Feud was my favorite.
Me too. Love that track.
Or Receiver, or either, you know.
Yeah, I'll take the feud. What would you give it out of 10?
Eight.
Nice.
Yeah, eight.
I think it's going to be a six for me.
Okay.
But you know, with all the respect that it deserves, I think, you know, it's really strong. But it's just not the Sounders isn't for me. That's okay. What it is.
But you were surprised at how much I liked it, so.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, but that's always cool when that happens. So, yeah. Modern Time Machines. And it's one that I may dip back into. It just depends on what mood I'm in. Great stuff. Okay, so moving swiftly on, why don't we talk about Fiddlehead?
Chris. No.
Crisps.
No, not Chris.
I'm oh sorry.
I was gonna say Kevin, just
as I'm always
should have said Kevin.
Always down to talk about Crisps. Yeah, so this is a band from Boston, like so many great bands before them. The name of the band is Fiddlehead, and the name of the album is Springtime and Glime. These guys came onto my radar maybe 2 months ago. When their EP just sort of drifted into related artists, which was called Out of the Bloom. It came out in 2015, and it just hooked me immediately.
Yeah, I really like it. I mean, I wouldn't call it mumblecore, but you know where I'm getting at?
I think this sits very comfortably in post-hardcore. Like, this is as close to Fugazi and Sparta and Departures.
Sparta,
and,
yes.
And Hot Water Music.
Uh-huh.
Those kind of bands where you get unapologetically melodic guitars, but like melodic but scrappy guitars and gruff but melodic vocals. Like, that's what it is. It's like challenging music that's informed by the aggression and sort of complexity of hardcore, but moves beyond that in terms of like melodic scope. That's what it is.
Okay. That's probably a better explanation.
But you know, but like,
I'm not too.
Yeah.
This is not always my kind of thing.
Yeah.
It needs to really differentiate itself a lot from all that, which is already there. And
but there is stuff I think that, like, there's stuff that you'd be very familiar with that I think this touches on. Like,
yeah.
Smashing Pumpkins or Prawn at points. You know, there's even a sort of Teenage Wrist style riff at one point.
There are bits, yeah.
The last track begins with an almost Queens of the Stone Age.
It does.
Early Queens of the Stone Age kind of riff.
I like that quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, so it's basically catnip for me. This is just another one of those albums that I have absolutely fallen for with no reservations. I think it's phenomenal.
I mean, by folksy, I mean like Bar Time. Like Boston Bar Time, kind of rowdiness.
You see, the thing is, you and I obviously both have you have much deeper connections to Boston than I do, but you know, because I have pals from Boston, and Boston music is something that I've encountered, you know, up close and personal, as well as through friends and things like that. So I just have a real soft spot for the intersection of just raw emotion, aggression, heaviness, and melody that you get with Boston music, and this is just a really, really good example of that. The singer, whose name I will find out for you now, Sean, the singer Sean, he's got this kind of voice where most of the time his like default position is gruff, half bellow.
Yeah, I'd say 80% of 95% of this album is that, which can work to its detriment.
Okay, I see. That's because it's something that I really like.
And then
he takes it down at points.
I like that.
Yeah,
for like bits.
Okay,
like the Bronx, for instance.
Yeah,
switch it up a little bit more to my preference.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, there's, you know, he, I suppose it just
he sticks on the the one trick pretty well.
Kind of, but then at the same time, like on tracks like Headhands, there's almost a, you know, Sunny Day Real Estate kind of vibe. Like, he goes much more angelic and straight up emo as opposed to the rougher edge of the rest of the album.
Yeah.
But, you know, anything, it is that sort of porcelain era Sparta sound that just draws me in completely. That you get on tracks like Tidal Wave and USMA. And then on Rejoice you get almost like a basement style kind of vibe. And it, you know, it's
Tidal Waves as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's the that's probably my, well, it's definitely up there.
Yeah.
And they do that thing as well that Basement do on, especially on that their first album, which is they, you know, they drop in clips like sound, or they Brand New did it on Science Fiction as well, where they drop in clips like there's a televangelist at one point, there's like something that sounds like a therapy session, there's like a domestic argument, and I think that adds really cool atmosphere,
especially
to an album that's only 24 minutes long or 25 minutes long, whatever it is.
It's like you brought up the Brand New, I was like, I haven't listened to that album in so long.
I know.
I'm so sorry, but you know.
Oh man, it's extenuating circumstances, but you know as well as I do.
But yeah, it combines a lot.
Yeah, and then they kind of keep the silver bullet in the chamber for track 8, like Lalo was the big single, but they, you know, it's, but that's, they keep it to the second half.
I would have done that sooner.
No, I think it's a smart idea.
Well, I would have been more on board this album if it was sooner.
Really?
Yeah.
You're not on, I think Spousal Loss, is that the first track? It's just a really, really good way to start.
Yeah, I do love the guitar work, but I think it sticks to that kind of song form a bit too much.
That's interesting.
Even when the songs are chorded much differently from the last,
it
still sounds kind of similar.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose it depends on what your tolerance is for the rough and ready 90s production.
I mean, normally, yeah, Fugazi is my fucking jam.
Yeah, yeah, but right. Fugazi
songs,
it has a DIY sound.
DIY sound. But Fugazi songs are very distinct. There's no one like the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
It's just, I think they add in just enough extra elements to make it really worthwhile. I just think some of the harmonies that they layer on top of his voice and... like the little background, almost like low pass, high pass backing vocals and different things. It's just, it really gets me, this one. It just kind of hits, it like hits my emotional core in a way that this music often does.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's still a lot of fun. It's turn on anything from the first three tracks and you'll get exactly what you want.
Yeah. And if you, and like it only takes the length of a Friends episode to listen to, do you know what I mean? So it's super short, and I happen to think it, you know, brings new energy, like youthful energy, to this sound that has been so well worn by other bands. But
yeah,
you know, but I think they do a lot of their own stuff.
They do, but I'm not gonna say they're getting stagnated. There's a bit of stagnation in the Rebirth.
Yeah.
But it already seems like there's a bit of stagnation in Rebirth between Mengzinger's, like, oh, the list goes on of stuff that's arrived in the last 2 years. So if you want to come back, card, you gotta.
Nah, this is my of.
It's
of
comfort
the,
food, though. It's comfort.
Yeah, like
food.
Of the revivalists, I much prefer this style to, even though I love those albums,
Real Americana.
Yeah, like Mengzinger's or like Modern Baseball or Pop or whatever. I much prefer this. Kind of straight talking, like just
raw.
I don't know, raw,
Henry
like
Rollins,
yeah, like
almost
distilled, yeah, like Fugazi inspired post hardcore. I think this is absolutely excellent.
Nice.
And it's probably the most 90s thing we've reviewed. It's definitely in the running for the most 90s thing we've reviewed on the
There's
show.
Stuff coming up, but yeah.
So I guess I'll tell you my favorite track is probably USMA.
Okay, Tidal Waves is mine.
All right, good stuff.
Kind of had the Billy Talentish guitar. I like that.
Like, I'm just so excited to go home and listen to this again. This came out on Friday, and I feel like I'm only getting my head around
it'd
now.
It'd be nice on vinyl, I'd say, or something.
Oh, man. Mm. I am running, not walking to my local vinyl distributor. It's a 9 for me.
It's a 7 for me.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, great stuff. So that's...
Let's hop along to...
Springtime and Blind by Fiddlehead. If you like any of those bands we mentioned, check it out. I think it's well worth your time. Okay, and then I'm going to throw to you, Dylan, for the last new album of the week. This is Bark Your Head Off Dog by Hop Along.
Yeah, definitely has the elements of like... the most rocking you can be at a tea party kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Reviewed some artists that sound a bit like this as well recently.
Mm.
Recent times. And yeah.
Have we talked about On Palette at all? Like Final Fantasy?
No.
We need to do him, him 1 week. But yeah, there's a little bit, especially on that last track.
We did it for Album Club, right? Fucking.
Oh, we did.
We did. It was a while back, though.
We did Has a Good Home. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I hear a little bit, especially on that last track. I hear a lot of that. You know, it's that sort of chamber pop meets indie, meets folk, meets whatever else.
Yeah. This is kind of the Seatbelts meets Radiohead. Meets like
First Aid Kit.
Placebo at their lightest. I guess Placebo at their most jingle jangliest.
Yeah,
and you get this kind of band with very kind of female indie singer. It's called Pilgrim Soundtrack vibes. Is that all clicking?
No, that's clicking. Yeah. That's clicking. It's
very memorable. And
Juno soundtrack also. Yeah,
but there's an element of rock, like real rock and groove to it.
Yeah, I did give this one a couple of spins. I definitely heard something I wasn't expecting because I kind of got in. I don't say I got into them. I know one of their songs from Painted Shut, which is their last album.
Okay.
Which is called The Knock, and it's an excellent song. I should really listen to that album, but. There's almost like a breezy, bright and breezy summery vibe to some of this. Like almost like Tudor Cinema Club.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. Like it's like an extra string to their bow.
But I prefer this a lot more. I definitely prefer this a lot more.
Yeah. It's super varied. It makes for a very relaxing and insightful listen. Do you know, I only listened to it twice, but both times, you know, it really kind of kept my attention.
It's totally worth a lot more.
Yeah.
Like, this is how you wake up on a Sunday morning in a good mood, is listening to this album.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, I don't... Like, this is new for me as well.
Yeah.
Like, just... the guitar work is very... It's wiry.
Mm. Yeah.
But with just enough crunch to make a kind of impact, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think it doesn't feel sterilized. It definitely feels like, you know, real people writing about real things, and without too much studio oversight or like label oversight, which is really nice. I think it feels really organic.
Yeah, totally. Almost a total DIY kind of affair. I think no label interference whatsoever. I don't think,
like, this is the kind of direction I wish that Wyvern Lingo had gone in, as opposed to just diving in the deep end of commercial R&B. You know, this is updating a folk sound by adding in extra instrumentation and bringing in lots of different genres and blending it all together with very good songcraft.
Yeah, very good songcraft. Like, I think the peak of songcraft is Look of Love.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Where it's really good. It's really good.
Yeah, I think the singer whose name eludes me.
It's almost like a really good musical track.
It's got that those kind of like those chord changes of that are informed by musicals and things. Yeah.
Yeah.
But she just has a really distinctive voice. Like,
it's really unique.
It's very unique. And it's definitely not sugar-coated or anything like that.
Yeah.
Inspired
by some people we will come to in a bit. Almost.
Yeah, quite possibly. Quite possibly. I want to give her a shout-out, though, just because that's why I've been desperately padding for time here, trying to Google.
It's very much kind of like a Regina Spektor.
That's it. That's
playfulness to it.
Francis is her name. Francis.
Yeah, bit of PJ Harvey in there, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. It's really good. I need to give it more listens. Quite frankly, I haven't given it enough, and it definitely deserves more, which is the best sign of an album that I don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm excited because I'm bowing out of this one totally, but I'm very excited to go back and listen to this one because it sounds like they've really done justice to their legacy, because Painted Shut was like a really critically acclaimed, kind of a sleeper hit, I guess.
Okay, cool.
And they're from Philly, and Philly needs more good bands. I think... is it Maybe She Will come from Philly, I think? And I can't think of any others off the top of my head, so...
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's that.
So it's good news all around for Hopalong.
Yeah.
What was your favorite track?
Favorite track was I don't know everything too well by song name.
Yeah.
But I think let me think.
It's between The Fox in Motion and Prior Things for me.
Yeah, The Fox in Motion.
Yeah, I'll go Prior Things then. They're both excellent tracks. And then do you want to give it a score, Dill, at this point?
Oh, Prior Things was the last song. Yeah, that's great as well. Oh,
yeah,
God.
It's really good.
I'm going to give this an 8.
Cool.
It's a very good 8. Brilliant. It's almost a 9.
Okay, yeah. That's great. Well, I can't wait to go back and listen to you. I'm not going to give a score because it would be a sham.
Yeah, it's nothing like we've reviewed before. I'll say that. It's really not.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's definitely... I'm trying to think even what the closest thing would have been, but we don't dip into folk all that often.
No, not too much. I mean, you bring up occasional ones that are like this.
Yeah, but maybe we should.
Yeah. keep going. Yeah.
maybe we should. Can you tell that we really prepare for the show? We're like padding for time here as we desperately search through our Spotify playlists. But in any case, I think we can probably put a bow on Hop Along for now.
Yes.
And hop in our time machine all the way back to 2005 when Imogen Heap released her second solo album called Speak for Yourself. So yeah. Imogen Heap she's kind of never done anything else apart from make music. You know, she learned cello and piano and clarinet and every bloody other instrument under the sun, guitar, piano, everything when she was in school, and then pretty much as soon as she got out of secondary school she started professionally making records.
It's quite intimidating to realize there are musicians this good on the planet.
Yeah, exactly. The funny thing about it is she wasn't, you know, I think she was kind of in her late 20s making this, but she had already had, like, you know, two studio albums under her belt.
It seems like a life of experience to make an album like this.
Exactly, right. So she had her first album, I Megaphone, came out in 1998, which I really like, but it's a little rough around the edges. You know, there's definitely moments that she probably looks back on and is a little... it feels like they're maybe a little bit immature or whatever, you know, like you would look back on your very earliest demos, but I think a lot of it is really solid. And then with this guy called Guy Sigsworth, she did an album as Frou Frou, which is
I enjoyed that actually.
Yeah, I actually am not so familiar with it, but I know their lead single, I think it's called Let Go, and they did a song on the Shrek 2 soundtrack as well. Anyway, and then that brings us to Speak for Yourself, which she wrote and recorded without the backing of any label. She just did it in her own time and then managed to find a distributor for it. And given that, the just purely the professionalism of this album for a genre where it's not just plug and play, like, this is about as complicated a production job as you're going to find. Especially for the time, it combines, you know, serious amount of vocal effects with live instruments, electronic instruments,
electronic instruments, like fooling around with the actual guitars,
like
stuff.
Yeah, like vocoders and instruments fed through synthesizers. It's almost impossible to name one genre, but I suppose it's like poptronica, or like, you know, electronic pop.
It's almost a subdued complextro. But it feels like a lot more natural instruments are doing that.
Yeah, like it
you know,
it's almost has the sort of aesthetic of a richly textured pop electronic album, but with much more singer songwriting.
Yeah, like what
songwriting chops.
It's almost what if a quartet, I'm not gonna say portico quartet, but no, just a quartet, like cellos and double bass and stuff. What if they added some kind of electronic vibes to them? This is what the turnout is, I guess. And there's a lot of rock in there as well.
Yeah. Like, this,
so it's hard to pin down.
Like, you wouldn't expect me to sort of say that, you know, Nine Inch Nails were a touchstone, but at points on this album, they are.
No, freaking Garbage, dude. No,
or Garbage,
the band,
yes.
Garbage,
yeah. Yeah, Garbage, yeah, exactly. It's all in the mix. And I have to say, like, right up the top, that this is absolutely... this is probably my favorite...
album club you brought in?
No. Well, yeah. That, maybe? But one, okay, off, yeah, one, yeah, off. Yeah. But it's probably my favorite female solo album of all time. And it's well up there in terms of albums.
It's like how I was with Amanda Palmer in anything she does.
Like, this is my yin to the yang of you bringing Grimes to the show.
Yeah.
Or
Theater is Evil, maybe.
Yeah, or Amanda Palmer. Like, this is my equivalent of that. I connect with this album on a, like, deep, deep level.
Yeah, but this is nothing like that as well. This is... this reminds me of Yoko Kanno's work as well.
Yeah.
Like, in the more electronic sense.
Mm.
It's like, there's so many weird blips and bloops and...
yeah.
It's so hard to pin down. a genre. I need words.
Because this album did very well for Imogen Heap. And
did it?
Yeah, it did very well. And I think largely on the back of being featured rather prominently in The O.C., which is the roundabout way that I heard about her, basically.
Is that the weird vocoder song that has?
Hide and Seek.
Yes.
Possibly my favorite song of all time. Yes.
Okay, wow. it's
top five without question.
That's a really cool song.
Reminds
me of Daft Punk's Doing It Right.
Yeah, exactly. But it's
It's
such a mysterious... I almost feel like it's a gift that has been bestowed upon us by like extraterrestrials. It doesn't feel like it's... human music. It's just incredible, I think, that song. But that's the song that was featured in a very prominent scene in The O.C. And then another song off this album, Say Goodnight and Go, the second track.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then another song, which was Speeding Cars, a non-album single, were all featured on The O.C. So that's how my cousins, I've never seen an episode of The O.C. in my life, but my cousins were so obsessed with it. They were like, oh my God, have you heard the song? And they like,
they sure got it too.
Shoved their iPod headphone in my ears. And I was like, oh my God, what the fuck is this? Listening to Hide and Seek. And that's how my journey with this album and then eventually my whole catalog
just
started.
Do nothing while doing this album. Like, have it as loud as you can to pick up everything, because it's not a loud album per se, but it has to say a lot.
It does
to get its point across.
Yeah,
because you know, there's so much going on.
You've got like the strings, drum machines, guitars, like glockenspiel, flute. There seems to be a little bit of everything in the mix,
and weird kind of like tremolo-y digital effects like going under some elements to sound very Nine Inch Nails.
There's even almost like a chiptune vibe to that song. I think it's Daylight Robbery.
Yeah.
Towards the end.
That's a cool song.
Or it could be I'm in Love with You, actually, maybe. She covers so much ground here. And I think as well, you can't understate the strength of the vocal performance.
Yeah, it's extremely heartfelt.
Yeah.
Her vocals. Vocal technique is so interesting.
It's so it's so creative. Like on
Maynard James Keenan comes to mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On Closing In, there's just an example, but there's a part where she goes, "Is it safe now?" And where a lesser vocalist would have just hit those notes straight, she does this. It's almost like head voice, chest voice, head voice
open
thing.
Mouth. It's open mouth.
It's which is unbelievable. The combination of notes works so well with the chord backing underneath, but it's not something you would ever think to do. That it's and the fact that she uses vocal scat so well as instrumentation. Do you know?
Yeah.
She does like oohs and ahs and las, and she takes bits of the lyrics and transforms them into
like
vocal instruments.
Regina Spektor is the one that comes to mind with that particular style as well.
Yeah, it's very, very, very cool.
Using her voice as a synth at points.
Yes, she does. Yeah. She does. And she doesn't even need to like synthesize her voice. No. Like she'll just layer harmonies and pick out the syllables that work the best.
Chord out harmonies.
Yes.
As well.
Exactly. Which is what Hide and Seek is. I mean, it's the
just that
amalgamation of all those techniques in just one really simple song with just no accompaniment.
Yeah, it would be doing too much if it did anything more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for years that was such a mystery to me how she did that. She basically what she does is she roots her mic and a keyboard into the same system, and so that the notes that she's playing on the keyboard are identical to the bass note that she's singing, or like the root note that she sings, so that the keys she's playing on the keyboard fill out the rest of the chord.
That's cool.
On the same sound. It sounds wonderful.
Chromeo do that, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. It's kind of a talk box type thing.
Yeah.
And then it's funny, you know, when you look at it, talk about interviews with her, she tries to describe her own music and it's quite hard, but she sort of, you know, says that, yeah, well, it's, you know, it's singer-songwriter, but
it's art,
but no, but she says, you know, and I bring in elements of electronics and stuff, and then I kind of rock out in my own nerdy way, and there are moments on this album where
I believe PJ Harvey has said stuff like that about her music. It's like, I don't know where it comes from, it's just fuck it, it's great.
But it's so cool to hear an album with you know, with such a singular focus on being just beautifully crafted pop songs, and then on Goodnight and Go you get this just shredding solo for out of nowhere for like 3 seconds. You just, you know, it's like a flurry of notes.
Joe Satriani's the shit out of it.
And you know, Loose Ends, when that gorgeous counterpoint of the bass line and then her going dum da 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 dum, and then the piano line that's descending, and it all blends beautifully.
Stop, it's great.
but then there's a silence right before the big finale.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, we talk about those moments when you have like the kick the door down moment when the guitar just screams in.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a headbang moment when that guitar comes in.
You don't fucking expect it.
No. that guitar just comes in like...
Like, I was listening to this album on the train for like the full duration.
Yeah.
Just for the first time in... Since it almost came out.
Like, and were you into this album back in the day?
I couldn't understand it back in the day.
Okay, but you had heard it
barely
before.
A teenager, yeah.
Yeah, you had heard it, yeah.
Yeah. And now I was like, oh my god, I understand it all, finally.
Yeah.
And it's blowing my socks off.
Yeah, there were moments, there's definitely moments like where it just punched me right in the gut, because I hadn't... It's an album that I've listened to consistently over the years, but I don't think I'd ever taken the time since, you know, like in the last like 5 years, say, since I've gotten like decent headphones and, you know, a Spotify account, which has decent audio quality. I probably would have had like a, you know, crappy MP3 rip of the album or whatever before. Yeah. And just hearing it in all its glory on like good headphones was just a transcendent experience.
Yeah, you don't want to listen to this on 144p.
Well, I did for years, but you know, some of the nuances I was picking out of every song that I'd never heard before, like there's spoken word clips in the last song, I think
20 kbps.
What's that?
just no, it's fine. It's just the lowest of the low quality would be awful cruelty to this album,
like dial-up modem style.
Yeah,
but there's bits and pieces I hadn't even noticed before that I was picking out just purely. Mm-hmm. It just goes to show what an incredible job she did in putting it all together.
It's a very emotional album later on.
Yeah,
like the lyrics are especially deep rooted in just all of the most relatable stuff you can imagine.
Yeah, she thrives on the minutiae of life and like detailing really awkward social interactions.
Oh, fucking A.
Like
black books in song form. No, I know.
Just for now, I love it's. It almost seems like a chronicle of a really shitty dinner party or something, or like a bad evening out, you know, where everyone's at tenterhooks with each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the food is burning in the kitchen. You know, someone's put on some shitty music and it's all really tense.
Yeah.
But it's all wrapped up in this amazing, almost chamber choir style lead section. And actually, when I saw her in 2010, I had the privilege of seeing her live in Dublin. And when she was touring her album that came after this, and she got the whole crowd split into three and did the, you know, just for now, just for now, just for now. Yeah. And everybody, obviously, I don't know, it must have all been hipsters, but everybody was like perfectly in key. Sounded amazing. Really did. It was one of those moments you'll never forget at a gig.
Yeah.
You know, so and she's a phenomenal live performer, so it's a shame she doesn't perform more.
Aww.
Because
she has new stuff. She kind of, well, last album was recent-ish.
2014.
I
know she's mastering a new album. We're gonna cover the shit out of it.
Oh fuck yeah! Because the albums take a lot of time.
Because she just put up on Twitter at the start of April, being like, "I have barely slept the last few days.
Yeah.
We're in the mastering suite. It's 77 minutes long.
Yeah.
So unless it's a film score, it's a new studio album.
Yeah. She draws very slowly and intentionally her compositions. I can tell.
Yeah.
She doesn't draw the picture of her music very fast.
Yeah, and like, she hasn't gone as like, I think Ellipse, which is the album that came after this, was a very, very strong follow up, and I think Sparks, the album after that, it, you know, it's a little bit too ambient, or I don't know, like languid or something. Like,
yeah,
she almost
kind of like the way Björk went lately.
Yeah. This just feels like 10 or 11 like sharp concentrated shots of whatever she's going for in that particular track. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I want to cover that Björk album at some point. Just to see what can happen.
What's gonna happen when we cover Björk?
Yeah.
Time will only tell.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's really hard to get across in just a few minutes chat how powerful this album is, I think.
Yeah.
But I think we've gone some way to explaining why it's great.
Yeah, it's stuck with me now.
Yeah.
More than it was ever before.
Yeah. And it's funny now, look, with the benefit of, you know, 13 years of expanded musical tastes, that she does bring in those influences of, you know, people like Garbage or mm-hmm. Nine Inch Nails or Texas or whatever. And then, you know, there's even a moment in I think it is The Walk, actually, you know, that song, I Don't Want to Feel Like This, which is a bloody stadium-sized chorus. Yeah. But there's this huge, epic middle ace where she, you know, sort of finishes with that, you know, we are surrounded bit. And then she lets this kind of wail that almost yeah. reminds you of what, like, Nightwish would do or something.
Oh, yeah, Nightwish, Evanescence, kind of.
Evanescence. Yeah, it's Evanescence. Like an operatic soprano style.
Yeah, yeah.
Like what you would say, like the primal scream, yeah. almost, yeah.
The new kind of electronic symphony or orchestra album Evanescence came out recently.
Mm.
Sequestra, a little bit like her music.
Yeah. And then, of course, she brings it right down to just raw, strip bare kind of emotion yeah. on other tracks.
Like here are the root chords and stuff.
Yeah, and then towards the end, you know, it does get quite dark, especially on Closing In.
Yeah.
I don't
know if that's even a criticism.
No, not at all.
It's just like, I don't want to be this vulnerable in my music, kind of thing. Yes. I don't want to be listening to somebody's vulnerability this much.
There's a bass line on Closing In, which I just think yeah. has really inspired, you know, any of the bass work that I've done in bands. It's just this lovely spidery bass line that just adds so much atmosphere to the track.
It's one of my best parts. One of my favorite moments of the album.
Yeah. 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 You could pick out highlights, you know, for the whole day, I think. But
I mean, like, automatically my song would be Daylight Robbery.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Or Just For Now.
Just For Now, but all good. So Daylight Robbery is cool. Daylight Robbery is probably the closest thing to a straight up rock track there is on the album.
Yeah,
because the guitars come in from the start. Yeah.
That's the Garbage song.
Yeah, right, exactly. I love the moment I said it, because the it's definitely the most orchestrated of all the songs.
Okay.
And it almost has the feeling of, you know, the scene where everything goes wrong in a coming of age film, like, I don't know, where the guy says the wrong thing to the girl or something, but it's just got this lovely rich orchestral feel to it. But I think I, you know, just purely because it's had such a profound impact on my life, probably yeah. Hide and Seek would be my favorite song.
Oh yeah, sure.
But there's so much, and in terms of like the upbeat stuff, I think Loose Ends is yeah. just phenomenal.
I definitely love the first half more than the second.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's definitely the more sort of direct, like mm-hmm. singles based half, yeah. I would say. And then in the second half you get more drawn out song structures.
Yes.
And, you know, like it's got a little bit more room to breathe. I love them. I love both halves. I think there's
some. Oh, you do love both.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I hear you.
I can emotionally stomach the first
but like
half
for
more,
me, it's like it's a 10 know? Out. It's just this is just like almost an 11 out of 10 album. So I don't think there's any weak.
Yeah, it is. It is. That. How can it not be that?
Anyway, just off the top of your head, could you name your favorite like solo female artist album? If you just could you pick one out off the top of your head?
Because
this would always be my go-to, like instant.
Yeah. Well, let me go. Give me a few minutes.
I just think. Yeah, what she achieved on this album with incredible, like it's just for them so deep and complex. I think
yeah.
to have had almost no help is crazy. Like to be yeah. just doing this all in your home yeah. studio. PJ Harvey, I think I hear that. Yeah,
Stories from the City, Stories from the Sea is my favorite.
Okay.
Solo female artist.
Let's check it out.
Yeah. Besides Man the Bomber stuff, like
oh yeah.
Oh god.
All right.
But yeah,
I think we've done a respectable job of covering "Speak for Yourself" by Imogen Heap.
Yeah. We have.
But the only way you can really respect yourself is by listening to us.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Yeah, exactly. You're 13 years late to the party, but it is never too late for an album that good.
Yeah.
It's really well and truly excellent. Mm-hmm. Okay, and for the love of God, never ever listen to that Jason Derulo track that sampled.
God, don't.
I've
heard that.
Threatened to shit on everything I ever love, and I never want to hear that song in my life again.
Yeah. But it's interesting that the past she's gone to finish this off, like lately,
yeah,
with some of the featured artists, such as Deadmau5,
yeah,
that are featured on her albums. That's interesting.
Yeah, I didn't even know that. Actually, I have kind of fallen off the wagon a little bit. I don't know Sparks as well as I should, but I will go back to it.
Yeah,
because this I've just reminded myself how great she is. So that's Imogen Heap. Speak for Yourself.
Fuck yeah,
another fun one.
Yeah, another fun.
Can't
one.
Wait to see what you throw at me next in 2 weeks' time. But
okay, this is gonna be.
Thanks so much for joining us on this our 31st episode. If you made it all the way to the end, We applaud you.
Oh, yeah. Salute.
Yeah, salute. And find us on Twitter, find us on Facebook. Search for our playlist on Spotify if you want to keep up.
That's on CompuServe. No.
Yeah, we also have
GeoNet.
No, we're on Netscape Navigator and boards.ie. See you soon.
See you guys.
Bye.